Good evening. Glad to see all those that can make it out tonight. I apologize for not having slideshow ready for tonight. Normally when I make those slideshows, I make them the night before they have to give the lesson. And as of about 7 o'clock yesterday, I'm now a dog owner. So I have not had a whole bunch of free time, but the free time I have had has been spent about 3 feet from that dog. So I have not had a whole lot of time to write that. So I apologize for the no slideshow today. But moving into our lesson, one thing that has become very apparent to me this month especially, that we've been studying the topic of birthright. And one thing that's become very apparent to me is how much things differ than the way God planned. What I mean by that is man, as a species, as humans, we like things to be in order. We don't like chaos. We like order. And by doing so, we have rules and ways that we like things to be done. And in the Bible, the birthright was a huge, important way that men would continue on their lineage and different things throughout their generations. And so they had a very specific way that men liked to do it. But as we've looked at in some of these lessons that we've studied this month, that is not how God wants it to happen sometimes. Sometimes God likes to switch up or differ the way that that birthright is distributed. And so simply put, he changes the ways things are going to go in that lineage. And so tonight, I just wanted to take a few moments to look at not necessarily birthright, and we'll look at some birthright examples, but also just different examples in the Bible where man have their ways that they normally rule or dictate or do certain things, and then God comes in and says he doesn't want to do it that way, and he's going to change it up and do it the way he wants. So, as you guess, throughout the Bible, there are so many examples that you could look at of God's rule being greater than man's rule, God's way being greater than man's way. In some cases, like I said, God changes rules. Man have set rules that they follow, and God will come in and change them. So as he did in the studies that we've looked at in this month regarding the topic of birthright, in the Bible, according to the man law, it was the firstborn son who would receive the double portion. Sometimes God allowed that to happen, other times he didn't. Going back to Charles's lesson on Sunday, this is more of a different kind of example, but in the lesson Charles gave on Sunday, he was talking about Jonah and the fish. And in the story, we all know, Jonah was told by God to go to Nineveh and to preach. Out of fear, Jonah decided he did not want to do that, and quite literally, he did the exact opposite of what God commanded him to do. Nineveh was to the right. He decided to get in a boat and head left. Now, we all know the story did not work out for Jonah, and God eventually got his way. After running out of the way, getting on a boat, getting thrown out of the boat because there was a huge storm, Jonah was then swallowed by a whale, or a fish, however you like to call it. He spent 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of that fish, and then after a while, he prayed to God, and God told the fish to spit him out, and he was spit out on dry land, and he made his way to Nineveh, exactly as God had commanded him to do. And one thing I think that's important about that is because I really like Charles's lesson because he looked at some things that I just never really thought about it that way. And one thing, he didn't mention this, but I really thought about this whenever I was reading along with his lesson. I've always just kind of thought that the fish just kind of, you know, he got tired of Jonah being in his belly and spit him out. And that wasn't the case. In Jonah chapter 2, this is just in verse 10, this was after hearing Jonah's prayers, after he'd been in the fish's belly for 3 days and three nights. Verse 10 said, "So the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land." It wasn't this, the fish's choice was not to spit Jonah out onto dry land. It was commanded by God to spit Jonah out onto dry land. He didn't think, "Ew, this guy's starting to taste funny. I want to kind of get him out of my stomach." It wasn't that. God told him to spit the fish out because it was time for Jonah to head to Nineveh, just as God had commanded him to do so. Another well-known story of God's rule being greater than man's rule is the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We all know the story. King Nebuchadnezzar, he had made a very large golden image. And every time he said the harp, music, cornet, and there was different types of instruments listed, but every time those instruments were played, everyone was supposed to bow down and worship this golden image. Anyone who did not bow down, as we all know, would be thrown into the fiery furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, of course, when the music played, they did not bow down. They said, we're not going to do that. We have our God. He has commanded us to not worship these golden images, and so we're not going to do it. So, in Daniel chapter 3, this is starting at verse 13, it reads, then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So, they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made, good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning, fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the golden image which you have set up. So, man's rule, King Nebuchadnezzar had set up a law, a rule, that whenever you hear the music played by these instruments in symphony, you are supposed to bow down and worship this golden image. That is man's rule. Now, as we all know, God's rule takes precedent over man's rule. Now, God's rule is overruling man's rule. We all know how the story ends. The furnace was heated 7 times what it was normally heated, because Nebuchadnezzar was so mad at these 3 men. The 3 men were thrown in, and then King Nebuchadnezzar was quite amazed when he looked in and saw 4 figures walking around in there. Daniel 3, skipping down a couple verses to verse 24, the Bible reads, then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? King Nebuchadnezzar, he had set up a rule that whoever, or anybody who heard the music, was supposed to bow down and worship. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew that this was man's law. This was a man's law created by man, but God's law is above man's law. It takes precedence. So they were going to follow God's law. And they did. And getting themselves in trouble with man's law didn't really matter, because God was on their side and they were following God's law. Another quick example off the top of my head, Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel, the king was tricked into kind of making a law that you're not supposed to pray to God. Daniel was found praying to God, so he was thrown into the lion's den to be killed by the lions. That was the whole intent of Daniel being thrown in there. All because of a rule made by man that you're not allowed to worship God, but obviously that is not God's rule. And God saved Daniel. He did not allow the lions to eat him, and that's the story of Daniel in the lion's den. So, recently, we've been studying this past month about the topic of birthright and how, in some pretty key, instances where the birthright is divided in the lineage of Jesus, in the lineage of the Bible, God changed the way that man had planned for it to happen. In the study we just covered, Grandpa talked about it, the children of Jacob, or who would later be known as Israel, Reuben was his firstborn son. So, according to the law of man, the law of the birthright, Reuben should have received the double portion. But falling out of the graces of his father, he was passed over. And actually, Jacob's birthright was actually given to his son Joseph, who ended up being split between Ephraim and Manasseh. And then even then, Dad covered this in his lesson a couple weeks ago. In Genesis chapter 48, starting in verse 12, Dad talked about how the right hand was always the blessing hand. People in the Bible were more right-handed than left-handed, so they typically blessed. When the father would bless the sons, he would bless the one with his right hand, the oldest with his right hand. So, starting in Genesis 48, verse 12, so Joseph brought them, his 2 sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, from beside his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel, or Jacob's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. Then Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger. and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, let my name be named upon them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And so, if this was blessing would have gone according to the way man's law or man's rule would have mentioned it, his right hand would have been on Manasseh, his left hand would have been on Ephraim, because Manasseh was the firstborn of Joseph's two children. Ephraim was the youngest. So if those two kids were to receive the birthright of Jacob, Manasseh should have gotten the double portion, and Ephraim should have gotten the other half. But that's not how God and how Jacob went about doing this. He put his right hand on Ephraim's head, the younger one, and his left hand on Manasseh. So Ephraim ended up getting double portion. And what Dad talked about in his lesson, this is when Joseph comes up to his dad. Hey, Dad, you're doing it wrong. It's other grandchild, I should say. But picking up back up in verse 19, his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. By simply responding to his son Joseph, I know, Joseph, I know what I'm doing. I might be a dying old man, but I know exactly what I'm doing, because that is the way God wanted the blessing to be passed down. Jacob, or Israel, as he was later known, went against men's typical ways of blessing their children with the birthright. He changed it up because that's just exactly the way God wanted the blessing to be dispersed among the children of Jacob or the children of Israel. And so, when looking... Whoa. Must have hit that with my knee. When looking at this topic, I found an article that I really liked. And more specifically, I just really loved the title of the article. And so the article was titled, Man's Ruling and God's Overruling. And I thought that was a perfect title for this lesson. Because man is always going to rule or think they're the rule. That's just how we are. As humans, we have the tendency to become greedy over time, and we desire things that we do not need. And in some extreme cases, people can desire power or control so much that they'll go to great lengths to get that. But I think it's important to remember that no matter how hard we try, no matter what we do, the rule of men will always fall short to the rule of God. It's God. He is the one true ruler, no matter who reigns here down on earth, and whatever kingdom or country or government we have set up here on earth, God is the one true ruler. And it kind of goes back to a lesson I gave a couple months ago that was titled, "The God is Greater Than I." And I think that's the perfect description. No matter how hard we try, what we do, we will always fall short of God. No matter how much we think something is right, if it's against God's ways, we're wrong. There's no other way to put it. And now, before I go, I have one more point I wanted to make. It really doesn't go along with this lesson, but I wanted to share it with you because I thought this was perfect and the timing was kind of great. So in his lesson on Sunday, Charles, I think, gave an excellent point regarding the story of Jonah and the whale. And recently, this past month or so, I watched a video that tells a very similar message, but it was one that I could relate to. One of my favorite pastimes is watching football. I love watching NFL football, or college football, or high school football, whatever that may be. You know, every year I do that fantasy football stuff with my friends. I love watching football during the winter and fall seasons. One thing I've learned throughout many years of watching football games is, especially for me, it is extremely easy to get real frustrated and upset with either a player, a coach, or a specific play call, a ruling made by the officials. I mean, there's just lots of little things that can kind of make you upset really quickly. And more often than not, I find myself yelling at the TV over what is a stupid play that one of the players I like made. But, however, I watched a video recently that kind of changed my perspective on this a little bit. I can't remember who was in the video, but the guy talking in the video, he was a former NFL quarterback. And his main message throughout the video was that before you get mad and frustrated with a quarterback on your favorite team for making a dumb play, you should think about what he's going through out there on that field before you kind of get mad at him. So put that in perspective. You kind of get a rundown of what happens every single play. So obviously, every single play, the quarterback is on the field. He's playing. Up in the press box, way in the stands, is the offensive coordinator. He is looking down on the field, looking down on the defense, trying to see if there's anything that he likes, something that will work. If he sees something that he thinks is going to work, the quarterback, actually, in the NFL, they have radios inside their helmets. So the quarterback and the offensive coordinator can, or the offensive coordinator can radio down to the quarterback, hey, this, I think this will work, you should run this. Now, when I played football in high school, our play calls were about as basic as you could get. Our favorite play, our bread and butter, the play was called 12. So every once in a while, we ran that. If you were feeling a bit frisky, you might run 13. It's just the same play, but the other way. You know, that was our play calls. And so I looked up an example. This is an example of an NFL play call. It's green right X, shift to Viper right 382, X stick looking. Now, I can barely say that without slurring my words together. I can't imagine having to hear that on a headset and repeat it to a bunch of guys in a huddle. Another point that this former quarterback made was that a lot of people don't know about this, but that radio connection between the OC, offensive coordinator, and the quarterback lasts for typically about 15 seconds before it gets kind of shut off, because that's just the connection they have. So if you're, the play you're running is the one I just listed off earlier, you might hear green, right, X, shift to bike, and then it cuts off. And as the quarterback, it's your job to have that entire thing memorized. Once again, I can barely say that without stumbling. I can't imagine having to memorize that entire play. So once you have that play called down from the OC, you got to repeat it to everyone in the huddle, and you have to break the huddle, get everybody lined up. On nearly every single play, you'll have a receiver come up to you. Hey, what do I do? Lineman, who do I block? Where do I go? Quarterback's job is to get everybody set, lined up, and ready to go and snap the ball before that snap clock goes down, the timer goes down. Once the ball is snapped, he's got to go through his progressions. He's got to find the open receiver. He's got to throw a near perfect pass with pinpoint accuracy to complete the pass. All while normally at least four defensive linemen, who are probably four of the most athletic men on the planet, are chasing after him, trying to tackle him. And all of this is going on with 60,000 fans screaming in his ear. And all of that is for one play. And hearing that story, it really just put it in perspective. So, I mean, watching the Cowboys game on Sunday, if Dak Prescott throws a stupid interception, instead of automatically getting mad and yelling at my TV, I should think about, you know, maybe Dak's going through a lot on that field. I wonder what that would be like, and it would give me a little different perspective as to not get so frustrated or to judge these people so quickly. And I think the same message can be applied to the people in the Bible. I think it becomes easy to become quick to judge these people in the stories that we read about in the Bible. In Charles' lesson, he spoke about Jonah and the whale. Of course, it's easy to bash Jonah for his decision to run from God and to run out of fear and run away from Nineveh. We know exactly how this story ends. We know he's going to get swallowed by the whale. We know he's going to spend 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish. Why would you be so stupid, Jonah? Why would you make such a dumb decision? Just go with God. You know it's going to end out his way. At the end of the story, it's going to go God's way. You know that. Why would you make such a dumb decision running from him? Well, that's easy for us to say, because as you know, outsiders looking in, we have all the answers in the Bible. We have all the information. We know exactly what's going to happen. And at the time, Jonah didn't know any of that. He didn't know he was going to get swallowed by a fish. He knew he was running from God, which he probably knew wasn't going to end well, but he was scared. He didn't know what was going to happen. All in all, I think Charles made an excellent point in that it would just be good to look into these stories with a little bit of perspective about the people in the Bible, in these stories, what their lives are like at that time, instead of being so quick to judge these people in the Bible. But I know that didn't really have anything to do with the lesson about birthright, but I just thought that was an excellent story in the video. I thought it had an excellent message, and I just wanted to share that with y'all. But that's all I have for this evening. Hopefully something I said was beneficial, but now we can stand and sing the song of invitation.